Hi, I'm Molly Wonsall.
And I'm Geoffrey Wonsall.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we've been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
Which is what prompted us to start this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wonsall and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wonsall.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Thank you for listening. I hope you don't find these too gloomy. But I find myself dealing with more and more murder. I don't quite know how it happened, but mysteriously, over the last 5 years, I seem to have spent pretty much every day dealing with the worst faces of civilization.
When I put things on our Instagram, I write # true crime legend about you.
Well, I don't know about that. But
I don't know if you want that title or not. Probably not.
I did send you a little bio this week, didn't I?
You did, indeed, yeah.
Which does seem to have quite a lot of death
quite
in it.
Quite a lot of death. Well, heavily weighted towards death. It's funny how the world works.
It is.
Where life takes you and all that.
Yeah. I never expected it to turn out like this, but in a way, I'm incredibly grateful. I got onto a tube last week, coming back to Holborn, near where I live, and a man said to me, sitting across from me, he said, "You're Geoffrey Wonsall, aren't you?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Oh, I love your programs." Well, I said, "Thank you very much. That's very sweet of you."
I believe you're getting recognised, Dad. It's so cool.
And as I got off, I said, "I think we're making another 10. And he said, "Great." And he said, "It's extraordinary." I mean, absolutely. I was very touched. But I've had people do that quite, you know, in the post office.
It's happening more and more.
Yeah, in the post office. You're that guy with the red glasses. And I say, "Yes, I am."
You do have quite a distinctive look, so it's easier for people to spot you in the street.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's even more distinctive as I'm wearing the shoes you gave me for my birthday.
They're very smart. I bought Geoffrey some Comme des Garçons Play Converse for his B-Day. They're white high tops with a little red heart on them. They're pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, I certainly don't look like many other 74-year-olds,
you
that's for sure.
You definitely don't, Dad. You definitely don't.
What are you doing this week, darling?
More things. I've got a flurry of press nights and premieres and you name it.
Oh, okay.
I've got them. September's just full of them.
Chock-a-blocker.
3 premieres and 3 press nights, I think. Can't remember. Anyway, there's a lot.
I'm addressing the Graham Greene Festival.
Are you?
In Berkhamsted.
Wow. Very nice.
On the line between true crime and crime fiction.
Oh, yeah, we mentioned that before, didn't we?
Which I think is actually quite an interesting subject.
Yes, well, we've talked about the fact we want to talk about that more.
Yeah.
We are going to, but we've already planned all our podcasts now for the rest of the year, so next year.
There, it's a 2020.
2020, we will delve more into our real Peaky Blinders style
podcast. We'll start looking at the real X or the real Y.
Yeah, yeah. Something we talk about quite a lot. So hopefully
you guys will be interested. Yeah, I think it's very interesting. But just to let you into a secret, we're going to do a Christmas special.
Oh, yeah. Well, don't give anything else away, Dad.
Nope,
that's it. Just that we're going to do one. Details to follow.
Details to follow. The teaser trailer will come in a couple of weeks' time.
Okay, cool. Should we get on with it?
Yeah.
So today we're doing someone I know nothing about. His name is Kenneth Erskine. He is known as the Stockwell Strangler.
Kenneth Erskine was born on July the 1st, 1963. He is comparatively, as Molly acknowledges, little known. And yet, in many ways, he is one of the most ruthless, deviant, out-of-control murderers we will ever talk about. In a period of just 15 weeks, he killed at least 7 people between the 9th of April and the 28th of July in 1986. His victims were aged between 67 and 94.
He killed old people.
He
no offence to anyone over the age of 67.
No. I'm in this age bracket, so I'm more than aware. Erskine was born in Hammersmith, West London, to a British mother and an Antiguan father. If you have a look at him on your...
I'm going to look him up on my telephone.
On your telephone. He had three brothers. They were abandoned by both parents in childhood and went to all sorts of various foster homes, special schools. His parents finally divorced in 1975 when he was 12, and he was said to have read the Bible as a boy. I'm not sure how true that was, but it was certainly said of him. But there was what is undeniably true is that he had a very violent streak from a very early age. He tried to drown a fellow school pupil. He tried to hang his brother, one of his brothers. And eventually, he became homeless as a teenager. He was a drug user, solvent abuse, glue sniffer. He was simply whacked in every way. And his criminal career, as so often, we talked about it so often, began, of course, with burglary to sustain his drug habit. But he was clearly quite clever at it, even though he was adjudged at the age of 24 to have the mental age of an 11-year-old. He nevertheless managed to create 10 separate bank accounts.
Well, do you think that was more as educational? No, I suppose mental age is not an educational
marker, really.
Is it?
No. We don't know what his IQ was.
It's his emotional intelligence.
Well, emotional intelligence, sure. But, you know, we don't know his IQ. It's not in any record I've ever found. But he was in and out of various institutions. In particular, he went to a quite notorious young offenders institution in London, in Hounslow, called Feltham, which is said to be the training ground for every subsequent offender in the world. I mean, it is an awful place. But
probably even worse back then.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. We are talking about the early 1980s. Erskine was wildly out of control. Now, what was the reason for his extraordinary, literally, cascade of murders? They began in April 1986, on the 9th of April, and his first victim was a lady called Eileen Ems of Wandsworth, and she was 78 years old. Erskine developed a very specific modus operandi. He would get into the flat or flats through an unlocked window. He didn't break in. He would climb in through the window, which often was left open. In fact, as the police hunt for him went on, the local police started warning old people to make sure their windows were locked. But he used to get in through the window, and he would then kneel effectively on the chest of the victim and put his hand over the mouth so they couldn't move and they couldn't breathe. Then Erskine, and the first victim shows no sign of a sexual attack. He posed her in bed, put the sheets back, blankets, as if she was just sleeping. And indeed, it was originally thought that Eileen Ems had died of natural causes, and that was what appeared on the death certificate. It was only when the housekeeper realised a day or two later that the television had gone that they realised that it had been a burglary.
Oh.
And she was then re-examined, and it was established not only that she'd been strangled, but that she had indeed been raped. That was to be the formula which Erskine perfected. 2 months later, on the 9th of June, whether the 9th is significant, I have no idea, a woman called Janet Cockett, who was aged 67, was strangled in her flat in Wandsworth. Again, Initially, her death was thought to be from natural causes. But this time, the post-mortem established it much more quickly that it was actually murder. And in fact, Erskine had left a palm print on the window. By now, it's pretty clear that Erskine is absolutely out of control. On the 28th of June, he attacks two elderly Polish men in a Stockwell care home, Valentine Gleim and Zbigniew Stobara, who was 94. Both men were strangled and both were sodomised.
So he doesn't mind if his victims are male or female?
No, he doesn't mind at all. In fact, he attempted to strangle a man called Fred Prentice at almost exactly the same time, but was frightened off. Same MO, you get in through the open window and the victims are asleep.
So he did, he, by kneeling on their chest, is that how he killed them?
Well, yes, partly.
And then suffocating them?
Yeah.
By putting his hand
Yes, but
there.
We don't know whether the sexual attacks were pre or post-mortem.
Pre or post-mortem.
On the 8th of July, 1986, William Carman, of 84 Islington, was killed. He was molested and strangled. In the 21st, on the 21st of July, 1986, William Downs, of 74, was again strangled in his Stockwell bedsit. And finally, on the 23rd of July, 1986, Florence Tisdall, who was 83 and lived in Fulham, was strangled and raped and found by a caretaker. She lived alone with her cats.
Did most of his victims live around Stockwell? She was a bit further out, or was it south?
Well, three or four are in Stockwell.
South.
One in Islington.
Oh, Islington.
Couple in Wandsworth. You know.
So mainly south.
It's mainly South London.
But then Islington.
South West London.
On the different, slightly different.
By the time that Florence Tisdall was killed, there is a full-scale Metropolitan Police manhunt for the man who is, and they believe it is a man, who is killing old people. 350 police are drafted in. Televised appeals. If you look at YouTube, you'll find some of the police interviews asking old people to be very careful, lock their doors, lock their windows, make sure not to open it to strangers. All of the above. There was a genuine sense of crisis in that swathe of South London. Yes, Islington's out of the manor, so to speak, but it was broadly a swathe of South and South West London.
Mm.
And there was genuine concern. I mean, the victims were aged between 67 and 94. They had all been one way or another attacked sexually before they were killed, or after they were killed. Again, we can only speculate. There were shoe prints found at three of the murder scenes.
So they knew it was the same person?
Well, they were increasingly clear it was the same person. But there was no... Although his fingerprints were on file because of the burglaries back in, you know, when he was younger, there was no specific evidence. And remember, he's homeless, or at least he's squatting in various different places. Not easy to pin down.
Yeah, he's got no identifying.
There's no fixed abode. Yeah. There's no identifying mark. If you look up gerontophilia, which is what I believe he was suffering from, it's called sexual attraction to the elderly. It was first coined by a famous psychiatrist, Richard von Krafft-Ebing, in 1901. It is a most extraordinary, something I find very hard to understand, but you know, it does exist as a condition. Finally, remarkably, Erskine was arrested shortly after killing Florence Tisdall when he went to the Social Security to try and conceal his many bank accounts, and he was arrested for trying to conceal bank accounts. It wasn't until he was taken into custody and the palm print from his second victim turned up. And then, even more tellingly, the 74-year-old Fred Prentice, whom he had tried to attack in late June 1986, identified him in a lineup.
Okay.
So they have the palm print and identification parade of this highly dangerous man who is a homeless drifter, drug addict and solvent abuser. He's suspected of four other killings in the period. Wilfred Parker, 81, of Stockwell on the 2nd of June, and Trevor Thomas, 75, of Lambeth on the 21st of July. They too had exactly the same same modus operandi, no forced entry, getting in through the window, and they were strangled, and all four were sodomised. Eventually, Erskine was brought to trial. And he tried to assert that he was mentally disturbed. But at the time, the jury and the judge wouldn't accept it. The Old Bailey heard at his trial that he was a killer who liked killing. He was given the longest life sentence then possible, a minimum of 40 years. He was subject to a great many psychiatric examinations. And in 2006, I beg your pardon, there was an assessment, and another assessment had taken place in 2004. He was diagnosed as suffering from chronic schizophrenia and antisocial personality disorder. And that had probably been the case since the age of 17. Clearly aggravated by solvent abuse, for example.
Yeah.
In 2008, Erskine appealed, went to the Court of Appeal and said, I do not deserve to be convicted of murder. These are manslaughter as a result of diminished responsibility.
Come off it. You have to be it's one thing being so like high and going and doing something mad. Wasn't that story about that guy in Florida who like bit someone's nose off or something?
Yes.
Remember that? But to do it that many times, surely you can't be.
Well, at his appeal, Edward Fitzgerald QC, who I happen to know, told the Lord Chief Justice, our submission is that these were crimes of manslaughter on the grounds of diminished responsibility rather than murder. And the psychiatrist, Dr. Andrew Horn, a consultant at Broadmoor for 20 years, said in evidence to the Court of Appeal that Erskine was suffering from severe schizophrenia, which would have diminished his responsibility to a massive, quotes, degree. Erskine was on legal aid. It only cost the taxpayer £100,000.
So happy to help.
Erskine was sent to Broadmoor. Indeed, he was. His appeal was accepted. And he was sent to Broadmoor.
So he's going to be released?
It gets better. At the Court of Appeal hearing, Erskine is so disinterested or unconnected that he actually falls asleep.
Wow.
And starts snoring.
Wow.
And the Lord Judge, the Lord Chief Justice at the time, pointed out to his barrister standing in front of him that his client had better wake up. He's entitled to attend the hearing, but he's got to be awake. In fact, Fitzgerald won the case for Erskine, and he did. His murder convictions were set aside, and he went to Broadmoor.
Maybe they hopped him up on loads of those drugs and things.
Well, maybe.
That make you sleepy.
Well, it's possible. But what is also true is that in more recent times, Erskine has been transferred from Broadmoor to what's known as a medium security facility.
Oh, cool. He's not a threat to society.
In Theakston, not far from Reading. Now, that caused something of a tabloid uproar, as you might imagine. because it underlined the fact that Erskine was clearly trying to get away with something. Forgive me, I am a cynic. I don't believe that Erskine suddenly had a Damascene conversion. At one point, he'd been bragging about his attacks. But the Mental Health Tribunal believed he was no longer a danger to society.
So he's...
He's still incarcerated.
But he was defined as being schizophrenic or having personality.
2004.
Okay.
He was finally transferred.
But now
2009.
He's not a danger to society.
Well, I think that's an argument.
Well, the mental people have said
yes,
he's not.
That's right. Medical staff and psychiatrists, and I quote here from the Mirror, the Daily Mirror. A Broadmoor source, medical staff and psychiatrists now believe he's a low risk, but others think it's all a clever move by Erskine. He's already told other inmates that he can't wait to get home. Where home is precisely is another matter.
But I assume none of his family are like...
Well, as he tried to hang his younger brother, I don't imagine they're any too keen to see him.
Have any family or anywhere
yes.
to go?
How's
he going to make any money or
he
do
said,
anything?
He said... when Prentice, the good Fred Prentice, actually identified him at the identity parade, he said, "I don't remember killing one. I could have done it without knowing it." Now, is that
I don't think
clever?
You rape people without knowing you're doing it.
I think it's quite likely. He's also insisted, he has a vivid imagination. He told one prison officer that he was haunted by a whispering woman's voice which came out of the walls and doors and gave him dizzy spells. "It tries to think for me," Erskine is reported to have said. "It says it will kill me if it can get me. It blanks things from my mind."
HelloFresh is the UK's leading recipe box service, delivering fresh, pre-proportioned ingredients and step-by-step recipes to your door. It's the easy, convenient way to cook delicious dinners from scratch every time. Choose your favourites from 19 recipes a week, including rapid recipes, ready in 20 minutes or less, family favourites, British and world cuisine, and even a lower calorie balance range. And because all their fresh ingredients come from their suppliers, pre-portioned for you, there's no food waste. Hey Dad, I wanted to tell you about HelloFresh. It's this recipe box service that I've tried. They deliver food to your door, you choose the recipes you want, and then everything comes pre-portioned with a recipe card, and you make it yourself. I found it really brilliant because I work such long hours and they provide a special set of recipes which you can cook in under 20 minutes. So when I get home from work, I can make myself a delicious meal and still have an evening, which, as you know, isn't always easy.
I do know that, darling.
And the great news is that HelloFresh are offering our listeners £60 off 4 boxes. All you've got to do is visit hellofresh.co.uk and enter the code BLOODTIES when you check out. So you should definitely give it a go.
Oh, I'm going to give it a go. It's got so many benefits. I mean, I gather it has a flexible subscription with no minimum term, so you can change your delivery day and skip weeks to suit yourself. I think it sounds like a terrific idea. You can choose a range of cuisines. As you say, there are recipes to cook in 20 minutes, but they also do family-friendly recipes, world cuisine, something to suit everyone.
Yeah, and did you know on average a household has 6 recipes that they stick to? HelloFresh can help you get out of that cooking rut by giving you 19 different recipes to choose from a week.
So, as you say, it's great news. HelloFresh are offering our listeners £60 off 4 boxes. Just go to hellofresh.co.uk and enter Blood Ties when you check out to enjoy really delicious dinners without the drama. It is the most extraordinary story. And I don't think anyone truly could see Erskine as a victim of circumstance. Yes, he may be intellectually challenged, but he was capable of burglary. He was capable of opening 10 bank accounts. And he was also capable of breaking into and murdering and sexually attacking old people between the ages of 67 and 94. And doing it with a relentlessness in a period of just 15 weeks in 1986. It is an extraordinary story.
Mm.
And yet, theoretically, he will be available for release. And I think it's very interesting, as you said at the beginning, how few people have heard of Kenneth.
Yeah, because it wouldn't be like Huntley, who we did last week, where there would be a public uproar. Well, I mean, I suppose
there'd be a small uproar.
But not quite, not nowhere near the same.
No. I mean, I think the Phoenix Survivors Trust said to put him in any kind of low secure unit in the area, you can't say he's not a danger just because he hasn't strangled anyone while he's been detained. I sympathise entirely with that view.
Mm, me too.
But it would be interesting. It was nothing like the furore there would be if there was an attempt to release a Huntley.
No. Or Warboys.
Or John Warboys.
Yes, I can't. Yeah, that's very interesting. I can't imagine that people will do.
Because that's where we get to this fascinating question. How does society react to someone who clearly did kill at least 7 older people, but then says, I'm possessed by the demons?
Yeah. I don't know. I think we have to... We have to look after them?
Well, we've still got Peter Sutcliffe, and we've never done the Yorkshire Ripper,
no.
Who is still in Broadmoor. Where they have very good pizza,
but
I'm told.
I'd rather they had pizza and more people didn't die.
Yes, I accept that.
But
Erskine is a very extreme case. You know, we are talking about 7 deaths in a tiny period of time.
Yeah, I mean, who's in charge? Do you know, like, who's in charge of making those decisions and saying, I no longer think you're a danger to society, therefore.
Well, theoretically, it would be the parole board, wouldn't it? When he comes up for parole. But if he's in a mental institution, it's the psychiatric team, isn't it?
Yes.
And a lot of people would say, well, we wouldn't trust psychiatrists. After all, they don't deal with hard men all the time. I'm not sure. I wouldn't.
Well, I mean, those people are supposed to be the specialist in that field.
Yes, but we also know, don't we, that it is possible, and it has happened, for sufficiently manipulative, devious men, and we are talking about Erskine being manipulative and devious, to pull the wool over.
This is true. We have talked about
psychiatric
investigations. I don't know, then, is the answer.
Mm.
It's a tricky one.
It is one, however, which lies at the heart of a lot of the cases that we deal with. Just where are the lines? I've argued in the past, for example, if you're a mother and you kill your infant child, you deserve treatment, not imprisonment.
Depends but how. Surely.
It depends how and how often, you know. I campaigned for the release of poor, tragic Sally Clark.
I know, but she didn't actually kill her children.
Well, her 2 children died, and it was only subsequently it was discovered that she hadn't actually killed them. But that took us a long time to get her out of jail.
And that's a whole different thing.
It is, but I'm asking the question that a lot of the people we're talking about. Well, he must be mad then, mustn't he? If he's a monster, he must be mad.
Ah, yes, fair enough. You mean the thing we always talk about was like born evil. Evil gene.
Yeah, I don't believe in the evil gene personally.
I do.
Oh, well, that's fine. I'm never argue with
you. I think some of the people we've talked about definitely do.
Do have an evil gene.
Well, no, that they are born, they are evil and malicious from the beginning of their lives. I know there are some that are treated badly and turn or are a product of their environment.
But you can certainly say Kenneth Erskine may have had an evil gene. You could argue that.
I could, but I could also say he had a difficult upbringing.
You could. And
so perhaps it's even worse than the 2 things
together. Yeah, nature and nurture.
Yeah, the worst combo.
Well, that was the Stockwell Strangler.
Thanks, Dad. Didn't know anything about Kenneth Erskine.
Well, there you go. I'm
delighted. But we all will now when he gets released from prison.
I think I'll be... on the other side of the Scylla and Charybdis by then.
Don't say that.
So what cheerful thing can we end on, Di?
Well, we want to...
Draw your attention to
the fact that our fabulous producer, Poppy, also has a true crime podcast. And it's going to be going out on Audible on the 26th of September. September. It's called Murderabilia. And so you should all go and listen to it. Follow Murderabilia Pod or search Audible on September 26th to find it.
Well, I do think that, you know, someone copying our podcast is a sincerest form of flattery.
That was a copying. Poppy was making this podcast when I very, very first got in touch with her to talk about her producing our podcast. She said, I just want you to know I'm also making a true crime podcast, but hers is different to ours because we do ours every week, and hers is, as far as I'm aware, and go and listen to find out, but it's talking, going and interviewing people who collect murderabilia, as in like bits of like killer's,
like the Black
hairs
Museum,
and you know, like the thing that was in the cell with blah blah blah, or the exa thing,
so
which is, you know, some people
the lead
thing.
Pipe or the, you know,
some people's thing to own, you know, whatever it is, Fred West's clothes. I'm sure they wouldn't have them. I know you're the person who touched them last.
I think the official solicitor and I have that.
Yeah.
Or the then official solicitor and I have that unique, having confronted Fred West's underpants. I think that's probably about as far as I can go. But
anyway, for more info on Murderabilia, go check out Poppy's podcast, Murderabilia Pod.
I certainly
on
will.
Audible.
Wonderful.
Well, thank you very much, Dad, and thank you as always to all the people that help us, least Poppy.
And thank you too to all the people who are kind enough to listen. I do hope you enjoy it. I do hope it doesn't give you nightmares. And as I say, literally every time, do be careful out there.